I'm Victoria, and I'm here with Peter Haywood-Butt, CEO of Ethos Capital, to discuss investment holding company Brait's latest reported earnings results. Peter, thank you for joining me. Before we get into the results, could you please give us a brief background on the advisory relationship between Brait and Ethos Private Equity and the role it plays within Brait?
Sure. So about 2.5 years ago, when Brait did a capital raise of about 5.9 billion rand in December 2019, Ethos Private Equity came in as the advisor to the board of Brait. So the role we play is we advise on the various assets, what to do with them, where to invest money, where to exit those businesses. And we advise the board. Obviously, the board takes the final decision. But so Ethos Private Equity is known as the advisor to effectively to the Brait board.
Starting off with one of the first main businesses that is a holding company or is a holding within Brait is Premier. Premier is a fast-moving consumer goods manufacturer in South Africa, and it represents 49% of the net asset value of Brait shares. So how is Premier Foods tackling the issue of food insecurity? In particular, how are they mitigating the impact of supply chain bottlenecks and lower production yields from food producers?
Broadly, you know, Premier is in its main a mill-bake business. It does milling, you know, flour and wheat, and it obviously does bread. So those are the two key components. That's call it 80% of the business. It's also got a confectionery business and a beverages business and a feminine hygiene business, Lillette's, etc. So if you're talking about the bread business, I mean, bread's obviously a commodity that is, for the lower LSM groups, an absolute necessity. You know, it's people down trade to bread and milling products. So, you know, in tough times like this where inflation is rampant, etc., and consumers are under pressure, often what happens is they downtrade to those sort of products, which we make. We're probably the second largest bread producer in the country. The biggest issues for us at the moment are obviously input costs. So wheat being a key component, it's probably 50% of the cost of bread, is always a big issue. And obviously we've seen prices go from below 6,000 to above 8,000. So it's made a very big difference to our input costs. But we've managed to pass on those price increases to the price of bread. But to give you some idea, you know, a 1,000 rand difference in the price of wheat, so moving from 6,000 to 7,000, which is broadly where we are, probably adds 55 cents to a loaf of bread. It's not 5 rand. So, you know, loaf of bread moves from 15, 16, 17 rand to 17 rand 50. So we've managed to curtail some of the inflationary impact. But, you know, it's an important part of our business and continues to be, and it's about getting your product into the informal areas, etc., so that people can eat the product. So it's been a very successful year. I think our EBITDA was up 36% year on year, which I think shows that we've invested for many years in the operating efficiencies and costs of making the product. So when inflation comes through like it is now, people down trade to our product, and we're still probably the most cost efficient producer of bread.
Obviously, the price of wheat gets a little bit expensive, but what happens when you don't have access to wheat? What if supply runs dry and there's a shortage?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So look, probably rough numbers, just over 20% of the global wheat supply comes out of Ukraine and Russia. And so obviously it's topical at the moment. We managed to insource most of our wheat from places like Australia, from South America. Obviously, we're now heading into the winter period, which is when we have the local crop, mostly out of the Northern Cape and Western Cape. So, you know, we certainly don't have supply issues per se in terms of can we get our hand on the product, but it's obviously had an impact on price. So going forward, obviously, what depends how things play out in Ukraine. You know, if it sorts itself out and this is a one-year blip, it won't be a problem. But being very big producers is obviously looking forward a potential issue. But you know what happens in certainly in the farming space, people will then, you know, plant in other areas. Certainly South Africa has seen an increase in their crop year on year. And I think that would probably happen if these prices persist across a number of different territories.
Will the rising fuel price impact the business? Can Premier continue to pass these costs onto an already financially constrained target market consumer? And I know they're using fuel in their ovens to produce the bread. And as it states in the financials, over 1,000 trucks are used to distribute these loaves across South Africa. So how do you mitigate rising fuel costs?
Yeah, so look, fuel costs are a big component part of the business in two forms. One, as you mentioned, in the ovens themselves. So it probably constitutes, call it 6%. So whilst wheat constitutes 50% of the cost of a loaf of bread, fuel in the ovens is about 6%. So it doesn't have a huge impact on the baking per se. But clearly, to your point of running a fleet of 1,000 trucks, diesel prices are massively important to the business. So your point of, so we are massively aware that, consumers are under pressure and there are long-term customers, and we've got to try and ensure that we keep them in the product that they have. But so what we've been able to do is pass on the price increases, but maintain it at just to make the same margin as we would have made. So it's not about scalping extra profits out of a tough situation. And I think, as I mentioned, people have downtraded to, to these commodities, to bread and to, to milling product. It's the bottom end of the chain. You can't go anywhere from there. So I think we are a net beneficiary of, people being under pressure. I think obviously the grant, the 350 Rand a month grant, is a big issue for people, and that enables them to buy, loaves of bread. So we have been able to pass it on. But, consumers are under pressure. It's a tough time for everybody.
Moving on to Virgin Active, the company has managed to raise 1.8 billion rands worth of capital, with Christo Visa contributing close to 1 billion rand of the capital. What kind of value do you expect Christo Visa to unlock for Virgin Active in the medium term?
The transaction we did was multifaceted. We started off by saying, we needed to raise capital, and we also needed a new CEO in the business. Those two happened to come together in the form of Dean Kowalski, who we ended up appointing as our CEO. So we went through a very detailed process internationally, and we all landed saying that, Dean was a great guy to come and help run the business. At the same time, Dean and a couple of his colleagues were interested in putting capital into the business. So we negotiated a deal with those third parties. So when we did that, Titan, in the form of Christo Visa, also said that they would be prepared to put in 50 million pounds. So the combination of Dean Kowalski's consortium and Christo putting around the number 70 odd million pounds into the business, what can they unlock? So obviously Dean is the CEO. I mean, he's great. He's got passion for the business. He's been around this business. He owns the Kwai business. And I'm sure if you've been into a gym, many of our gyms have the Kwai kitchens and outlets in there. So he knows the business well. He's come in with a huge amount of passion, and he's put capital behind it. So he obviously believes in it. Christo's been a very supportive shareholder to Brait for many years. And in this instance, we needed additional capital. We could have tried to go and source it from other third parties, but Christo was there and able to, do a deal in short term. And it's really helped the business. We're going to invest that business in growing the business, doing all the things that we haven't been able to do for the last 2 years. So, it's good to have them on board, and I genuinely think it puts the business in a far better place going forward.
I was doing some research on Virgin Active, and I came across a website. It's called Hello Pizza. I don't know if you've managed to see it, but I saw Virgin Active has a trust index rating of 1.7 out of 10. And out of the 5,500 ratings, 3,500 of them rated Virgin Active one star. So obviously disgruntled customers, but how does Virgin Active plan to revitalize its offering in the face of increased financial pressure on its target demographic and post-COVID, where people are changing the way they gym and adopting different ways of exercise?
Good question, and we obviously keep an eye on a lot of those consumer surveys. I mean, we've got a number that I could throw at you which would show something totally different, but that's not the point. The point is, you've got to give, in my view, you've got to give your members an experience. You can come and sit in a treadmill at home, but what do people really want? They want a feeling of community. They want to be able to come and go to a place where they meet people who are like-minded and they feel part of a community. I think that's been lacking during COVID. It's been difficult to get out. But what we've seen, and I'm not saying it's a fad, but if you look in the middle of COVID, digital was the only way to go. And even people were never coming back to gyms. They were always going to sit at home on their treadmill. Peloton went to, $40 billion of market value, and it's now back at six. And I think people are realizing you need both. You need to be able to give your customers the ability to come and be part of a community, come and have a personal trainer, have group exercise classes, an experience that they can't do at home. I think you've also got to invest in the membership engagement. And I think that talks to our IT platform, having an app which better talks to them. What do they want? Personalizing exactly what they want and offering them something. Integration of Real Foods, the Kauai business, is part of that whole wellness strategy. So it's not just about saying, here's a bricks and mortar place, come and run on the treadmill. It's about how do we talk to their general wellness? And that could be health in the form of nutrition. It could be in the form of mental health. It can be in the form of obviously physical activity. And I think we've still got a long way to go. I think we do it very, very much better in places like Italy and the UK than we do here. So that's part of the story. It's investing back into our customer base. It's the other part of the story is about rejuvenating the estate. And a large component of the capital that we've raised is going into rejuvenate the estate. You want to come to a place which is looking fresh, looking new, has got the latest bikes. So, you know, I think there's an element of that. So look, whilst, you know, I genuinely do believe the consumer feedback we're getting is a lot more positive than it has been, we've still got a long way to go. And you never rest on your laurels, even if you've got 5 out of 5. You've got to keep it up. So I think we're on a journey to get there, and Dean is passionate about this stuff. That's really where he comes from, as you know, offering Kauai to, you know, a whole host of people. You've got to get it; it's got to be spot on in terms of your offering. And I think he's going to bring that knowledge and capability set to, you know, to the Virgin Active business.
There's a large amount of rented real estate within the Virgin Active portfolio. Will Virgin Active reduce their commitment to this real estate and possibly focus toward more on the online offering side?
No, I think what South Africa has, and I'm talking about South Africa, I mean, obviously we've got a business in the UK and Italy and in the Asia Pacific, but if we talk about South Africa in particular, it's got an unbelievable footprint, which is, it's a massive competitive advantage. To be honest, it's the moat around the business. You couldn't replicate the estate that we've got. Now, are there some gyms that we probably won't renew, or at least we need to renew on better terms? For sure. Do we need to, you know, have we grown the estate into places where you start to cannibalize between, you know, one just down the road and here? I do think we got there. So there may be a small area of number of gyms that we would look to do that with. But in the main, it's actually not about that. It's about investing into the thing. It's obviously about sitting with the landlords and making sure we've got a rental which befits the number of members we have and the profitability of a site. But to the extent we can have a mutually sensible agreement with them, you know, we're looking to consolidate the estate to some extent, but other than that, to continue to invest behind it and make them, the gyms, better. Is, to be honest, so it's not about, and we've got a digital offering already. I think we can enhance it, but we do what we call phygital. I hate the word, but you know, physical offering and a digital offering together. So you can train at home, or you can go to the gym and see your personal instructor. It's one of the same things.
So New Look, which is a UK-based fashion brand, what value does New Look bring in the medium term in the midst of a tough trading environment within the UK?
Yeah, so the UK has been tough. I mean, there's no hiding away from that. I mean, we've restructured that business probably twice over the last 2.5 years. But I do think it's now got an operating platform and a strategy and a management team that really is starting to bear fruit. It's retained its stake as its number one market share as sort of women's wear in the UK, which is a massive, you know, massive market. And so there's lots of optionality there. We've restructured the portfolio. We've got out of sites which we didn't want to be in. And I think if you look at what's been really great is since COVID hit, the online business has moved from probably 8% of the business of revenue up to north of 30%. So more and more people are buying online. So they like the quality of the product, etc. And we've now got a new channel to market. But the bricks and mortar business is coming back. I mean, it had a very decent performance at the back end of last year, and it started well this year. So what does it do for Brait shareholders? I think it provides a real option. You know, if things go really well, that business could be worth a decent amount of money. It's 3-4% of our NAV at the moment, but it could go to, you know, multiples of that. And that's what we really focused on, is over the next 2 to 3 years, how do you get it to a place where, you know, you could sell it to someone who can, you know, at a decent return for our shareholders.